Welcome to the Ion Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Royce Young from CBS Sports Daily Thunder. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going very well.
That's good. I guess we're done here.
Yep, that's it.
That was definitive. That was definitive.
Yeah.
I guess the first question I have is Kevin Durant.
Yeah, Kevin Durant.
He's good.
Good/bad. I'll tell you this. This January, watching him up close and personal has been basically like a religious experience for me. It's like, you know, each night I go to the arena or watch him on TV and fully expect, like, okay, the magic has to run out now. Kevin Durant's spectacular. He's a great player. I know all this. But surely he's not going to be able to really, you know, do it again. Surely he can't score 40. Surely he can't hit another game winner. And there he is, man. He's just that good. And I knew he was good all along. It's not like I'm surprised.
Right.
But I kind of am surprised that, like, he continues to do this, even with all the media buzz and everybody talking about it. He just walks out onto the floor and just plays outstanding again, night in, night out.
It's to the point where, like, the thing I'm most impressed is that you see these clips where the double team is just running to him. Like, they decide, oh, he's got the ball at the top of the key. I'm going to run right at him. And it's not like this, like, kind of hedging thing. It's just it's a flat-out sprint to get the ball out of his hands. And he just watches it start to come, and then he's just like, okay, I'm going to shoot it now, and just, like, rises up. And part of that's his height, so he can just rise up and shoot whenever he wants to. But his recognition of what's going on the floor, like, he's not just hitting shots. It's the way he seems to understand the game right now. Like, I don't know if something clicked or he just got fed up with whatever was going on, but something has happened to where the game has completely slowed down, and it seems like he makes the right decision every time.
Yeah, and I think that's something – that's a good point, because I think that's something that he struggled with in the playoff series against the Grizzlies. You know, he was still putting up pretty solid numbers, but his efficiency was way down. He wasn't creating as well for others. Now, granted, a lot of his teammates were just missing a bunch of shots in that series too, but I do think that he kind of struggled in finding that feel of, you know, I'm used to being more open than this. I think, you know, because with Russell Westbrook out there, Westbrook puts so much pressure on the defense himself that, you know, life was, I'm not going to say easy, but it was easier for Kevin Durant.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's kind of been what he's been trying to figure out the past couple weeks. And I think he's kind of found that sweet spot of, you know, I know that the teams are going to shade me. I know that they're going to bracket me. And I know that I'm going to face double and sometimes triple teams. But, you know, I think Durant, like, the game winner hit against Atlanta is such a perfect example, because he recognized that double team coming immediately. And, you know, he went away from it, and all it took was just two hard dribbles, and he basically beat that double team. Because, you know, I think maybe last year that, you know, Mike Scott would have gotten there with that double team. I don't think Durant would have seen it and anticipated it and been ready to make his move just as quickly. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's natural. You know, Durant's now had 20-something games of playing without Russell Westbrook, so I think he's kind of figured it out a little bit more. But, I mean, it's a credit to him, and it's a credit to the Thunder for kind of finally figuring it out and not just kind of, you know, going along with what wasn't working when they didn't have Westbrook.
I did love that quote he had, basically, of like, I saw, like, I would have passed it, but I saw that I was in my spot, or I got to my spot, and so I took the shot. Everywhere is your spot right now. There's not a spot on the floor.
Where is he supposed to, what's not the spot? Like, where's the place on the floor that he was like, oh, man, I got to pass this. I can't believe I'm standing right here.
I guess technically out of bounds.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not allowed to shoot from there.
Yeah, that's against the rules.
It is against the rules. He is playing within the rules of the game. That Atlanta game winner was so cool because he did get away from the double team, but even he started driving down the right side, and you could see Korver start to come over as a third defender, and he did just pull up from that spot before Korver. I mean, his spatial recognition was just off the charts on that play, and I mean, it has been for years, but it's just another level right now.
Yeah, and I mean, there was no chance in hell that he was passing that ball. I mean, that was not going to happen at any moment. And, you know, and I think the Hawks knew it too, because, you know, they kind of, you know, they sent the double. Like you said, Korver kind of sagged off Fisher. Then they sent a fourth guy. And then the fifth guy basically was stepping up to cut him off at the rim. It was just like, you know, it doesn't matter. They're sending the whole team at him because we all know who's putting it up. It's not like Kevin Durant's going to dribble to that spot and then kick it out to Derek Fisher. That just wasn't going to happen in that moment. So, You know, I think it does say a lot about him, but that's just his God-given ability that he's 6'11", he has a high release, he can elevate when he shoots. You know, there's just it doesn't matter if you send all five guys. It's just he's going to get a decent look at the bucket, and he's capable of making anything from anywhere. So, you know, I really don't know what the Hawks could have done much better.
No, I think they played it pretty well. I mean, I guess maybe just full court denial for 48 minutes.
Yeah, denied it better, yeah.
Yeah.
Put two guys on him and just left Derek Fisher wide open.
Right. I mean, that's a good percentage play. Yeah. I think that you can't give him enough credit right now, but his teammates have played really well alongside mm-hmm. him during this stretch without Westbrook, which is maybe under-talked about, but understandably so.
Yeah, I think that was always kind of the big thing, again, going back to that Grizzlies series, that, you know, Kevin Martin was really inconsistent. He'd have, you know, a game one, I remember, against the Grizzlies. It was basically, you know, Kevin Martin was kind of the barometer. If he scored over 20, the Thunder were going to have a really good chance to win. But, you know, Serge Ibaka was shot, I think, you know, in the low 40s or high 30 percentage in that series. There just really wasn't a lot of consistent help. And, you know, Reggie Jackson has been okay. He hasn't been great. He's been a little bit inconsistent himself. But Serge Ibaka, you know, scoring better than he has in a long time. I think that, you know, you saw it last night against Miami, for crying out loud. The team hit 16 three-pointers. Jeremy Lamb's been good. Derek Fisher, who I hate to give him credit, has been pretty good.
Don't you dare do it. Don't you dare give him credit.
No, I feel dirty. I feel dirty saying this. But he's been pretty good. I mean, so, you know, I do think that Kevin Durant has, you know, and it's one of those things that is his teammates playing better result of him going to that kind of higher place and, you know, bringing them along with him and getting them better looks? Or is it just that everybody's finally kind of stepping up and figuring out how to play without Westbrook? I assume it's probably kind of a combination of the two.
The game against Miami was so fascinating because Miami starts out on what, like an 18-2 run. It was just kind of like, all right, here's the night that it's over. And,
yep.
You know, Miami's going to reestablish their dominance and LeBron's the guy and not Durant, blah, blah, blah. And then they took Kendrick Perkins out, something the internet has been shouting for years now. And they beat Miami at what Miami does. I mean, they went small and they just kicked their ass for the next, you know, what, 45 minutes of the game or whatever it was.
Yeah, all I can assume is that Scott Brooks was reading Twitter in the first quarter. I was like, man, this decision to play Kendrick Perkins just seems to be really unpopular. I should probably alter that. But yeah, I think you know, they were down 15-2 when Perk checked out.
Yeah.
And I think after that, the Thunder outscored them 110-80. That's a 40-point swing. I mean, that
sounds like a lot of points.
Yeah, it's not a coincidence. And, you know, I think that every Thunder fan is sitting here right now. They're pumped about this win. They feel great. You know, it's probably one of the most satisfying regular season wins that they can remember. But they're also rewinding to the 2012 finals and saying, why didn't you do that then? What would that 2012 finals have looked like if you had done that then? And but, you know, he made the move. And, you know, I've always kind of had a theory about it that if the Thunder were to get to the finals against the Heat, I thought that maybe Brooks, because surely Scott Brooks is smart enough to understand this.
Sure.
I mean, if I am, if you are,
right.
We can all see this, then Scott Brooks surely is too. But I've kind of always thought that maybe he was like holding that move in his back pocket for like the NBA Finals and like didn't want to show his hand in a regular season game that really didn't mean a lot. But maybe not. I don't know. Maybe I'm giving him too much credit there. But he finally made the move and it worked and it's obvious. And now I think the big question is the Thunder play the Heat again February 20th in Oklahoma City. What's Scott Brooks' starting five look like that night? You know, does he start Kendrick Perkins again and see how it goes, or does he just go straight up with the lineup that he used to start the second half?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering just in regards to the rest of their season, especially once we get to the playoffs. Is that something where he'll be fine starting Kendrick Perkins, but if he sees it's not going well early, he'll pull the plug on that whole thing and just go small and try to, I don't know, win a modern basketball game the way it's kind of being won? I don't know.
Win a modern basketball. You know, that's the interesting question. You know, Scott Brooks has loved the consistency of his starting five, and I think that it's kind of part of like the Thunder's kind of core values that they've established with their team is that they try to play with kind of like this arrogance of, You know, like, as it doesn't matter who we play, it doesn't matter how we play. If we just play to our capability, we'll beat anybody. And I think that that's kind of that's a good thing to have, but yeah. I think it's also kind of a bad thing. You know, for the most part, the Thunder, any team that they walk out on the court and play, specifically when they're healthy with Russell Westbrook, they're better than. They have more talent. They're deeper. And for the most part, if the Thunder play to their potential, they're going to win the game. I think the one team that we know in the league that that's not always the case against is the Miami Heat. And so just rolling that starting five out there, it just doesn't work. And there are a few teams in the league, you know, the Rockets like to play small, but, you know, Perk now has a little value against them, against Dwight Howard. I think it's just on Scott Brooks to be willing to flex and adjust, because, you know, when you've got players like Kendrick Perkins, you know, he makes $9 million a year. Forget about that part. Just as a basketball player that you have on your team, salary aside, he's got some value in some certain areas, in some certain matchups. So if Brooks was just willing to use him more as a specialist and say, okay, we need you in this situation, we don't need you in these others, we need Nick Collison for this one, or we need to go small in this one, I think the Thunder then have a lot more options. It's just, I think Brooks has got to kind of open his mind outside of that traditional, like, we need a power forward, we need a center, we need a point guard. I think he just kind of has to see it in a as a bigger picture of, you know, night to night we can play different ways, and we don't have to just roll the same starting five out there.
You've seen hundreds of games and covered hundreds of games with Scott Brooks as the coach now. What do you think? I mean, I was just on radio and they asked me, you know, is Scott Brooks a liability? And I said, well, I don't think he's a liability. I just don't know that he's a plus coach in terms of in-game stuff. But maybe when once you get to the playoffs and you're just not a plus coach, then maybe you are technically a liability. What do you see out of him? Because clearly, he's a good coach, because they are a very good team, and it's not just Durant and Westbrook. I mean, they have good values, but where does he? I'm not rank, because I don't give a damn about ranking coaches. But where, like, what's your confidence level in Scott Brooks to make the right calls?
Well, that's tough, because on one hand, you know, I think, like, last night, for example, I think Scott Brooks has known all along what he needed to do with Kendrick Perkins of the Heat. I just think he leans a little too much on the player's coach type of side of things. I think that Scott Brooks, he believes so much in chemistry. Like, he really does. I mean, he's basically Heisenberg out there. He, like, you know, he wants to, like, he believes that, like, good chemistry equals good basketball. And in a lot of cases, you know, anybody that's been around basketball for a while, chemistry does matter. It's kind of one of those intangible, dumb things, you know, but it does mean something for your team to like each other and to play well together. But I think he puts a little too much emphasis on it. And, you know, in terms of Scott Brooks being able to make it an adjustment or a series adjustment, I don't think he's got a great track record where you can really give him the benefit of the doubt. He is a good coach. I mean, I think the guy deserves a ton of credit. You look at what the Thunder have done with their basically with their own internal farm system. You know, the young players that they've developed. You know, I think Scott Brooks deserves a ton of credit for that, and I think that they deserve a ton of credit for getting a guy like Russell Westbrook to play within a system and to play with other people and to get along with Kevin Durant. Scott Brooks deserves a ton of credit for kind of fostering that whole atmosphere that's made that possible. But at the same time, I don't know if he's the greatest guy at, you know, recognizing a matchup that's going wrong and then making the adjustment to counter it. But at the same time, you know, I think Brooks' his kind of approach to it has been, I need to kind of stay out of the way of my team. And I think and this is probably a good thing with the Thunder at times, that he just resists overcoaching, because I think that this is the kind of team that if you overcoach them, you're not going to get everything out of them. So I think it's on Scott Brooks to kind of find that balance.
I actually like that point about not overcoaching, because I've seen that, especially this season with Rick Adelman and the Wolves up close, and it's frustrated a lot of Wolves fans of, like, he's not doing enough, he's not making adjustments. And I think there is a certain point, and the Thunder are clearly much farther along than the Wolves, but there's a certain point where you just have to say, you guys figure it out. Like, we've given you all the preparation you need, you know what you're supposed to do, you figure it out on the court. And, you know, there are times where you need to pull back on that, there are times where you need to push forward on that, but it is kind of a valuable skill as a coach to be willing to let your players figure stuff out. And the whole thing about developing Westbrook, you know, I'm a huge Westbrook fan, so I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but there was a possibility he could have been just Stephon Marbury. just a yeah. complete cancer and a guy who only guns for his and doesn't give a damn about the team win and every, you know, like there was a very real chance early on that Westbrook could have kind of slipped into that mentality and they kept him from doing that. And the development part is, I mean, that's legit.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, with, you look at Serge Ibaka, you look at Jeremy Lamb, you look at Reggie Jackson, you look at Steven Adams, you look at James Harden before he was traded, Kevin Durant, obviously. The Thunder have a great track record of taking young players and developing them, but I think the big one to me is obviously Westbrook, just because he was a little bit of a challenge, I'm sure. And even his second season, I mean, the guy was bullheaded. I think that, you know, I think the misconception with Russell Westbrook has always been, but that you know, that he's a ball hog or that he's selfish. I think Russ's heart has always been in the right place. I think I've never thought that Russ was selfish or wanted shots on his own. I think Russ just had a little bit too much confidence in Russ, and
right.
I think that you know, sometimes Russ was kind of getting in the way of his own self, and you know, I think so. You know, Scott Brooks, he, you know, everybody in Oklahoma City's always kind of noticed it, but like, Brooks is very, very rarely was ever critical of Westbrook to the media. You know, Brooks didn't have a problem. You know, he's a really positive guy to start with, but you know, he didn't have a problem kind of pointing out some turnovers for Kevin Durant or for somebody else. But Brooks, for the most part, kind of resisted ever saying anything negative about Westbrook. And I think that was always kind of, you know, that was part of the strategy in developing him, is because, you know, Westbrook's kind of used to be, I think he's a lot better now, but he used to be just kind of a ticking time bomb. You didn't know right. him. If you might flip that switch where you just ruined them forever. And I think that Scott Brooks, you know, kind of towed that line pretty well and walked the tightrope, and he's gotten the best out of it.
Do you worry about Westbrook long term? I mean, 3 knee surgeries in a year is kind of a lot. And
yeah, that is
and fun. They're not, I don't know that they're major surgeries, but they're not really minor surgeries either. Is there concern that, hey, we've got this guy locked up, big money, and he's just like maybe starting to become damaged goods?
Yeah, I mean, how could you not worry? It's, you know, on one hand, yeah, you look at it as, you know, if you're positive, which for the most part I'm a positive person, that if you look at it as, okay, he tore his meniscus, it was fully repaired, he had a scope to remove this loose stitch thing that was causing swelling, but when he came back, he was fantastic. He played pain-free.
Yep.
You know, the last 10 games before he had his second scope, he was averaging nearly a triple-double. You know, you can look at it that way and say, well, maybe he had a little bit of discomfort and a little bit of swelling, so they wanted to get it taken care of so it wasn't a problem going into the postseason. That's the positive side of things. The other side of it is 3 surgeries in 8 months is really scary. And you've got a guy that plays with as much athleticism and explosiveness as Westbrook does, and you kind of have to wonder, you know, not only – I think he can come back and he can play fine this season, probably next season, probably the next 2 or 3 seasons. But I kind of wonder, when he's 32 like Dwayne Wade is right now, what's Russell Westbrook going to look like? And, you know, I think Dwayne Wade's the type of player that, you know, he's been able to kind of reinvent his game a little bit. You know, people forget how explosive Wade was in 2006.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, maybe one of the fastest end-to-end court, you know, players that we've seen in the league. And, you know, he's obviously nothing near that, but he's a little bit more of a cerebral player, plays below the rim, kind of understands spacing and gaps and cutting. You know, is Westbrook going to be willing to reinvent himself? Westbrook plays a very specific style with the way he plays, with his aggression and basically anger at the opponent. Is Russ going to be able to kind of pull things back if his knees aren't going to let him play the way he wants to? And, you know, at age 31, is he going to be able to play differently? So I think if you're not worried about Russell Westbrook, then you're just not paying attention.
Do you think that it's something to worry about for this season, that it's just going to be – sort of a ticking time bomb? He's going to have to go down for another surgery, you know, in the playoffs or before the playoffs? Or is that something where you just have to trust the medicine and that they're going to get him ready?
I think that, yeah, obviously I think I'm anxious about it, because, you know, the way the Thunder are, I wouldn't say that the Thunder are deceiving anyone. I think that they've been up front, but I think sometimes the truth that you're hearing is just not even comforting, and you want it to be. I think you almost want to hear that there's some other problem, you know, to explain it, because it's so confusing as to, you know, on one hand you're seeing Russell Westbrook out on the court, he's playing wonderfully, and then the next morning, you know, he drops a triple-double on Christmas Day against the Knicks, and then the next morning you're getting a press release saying he had arthroscopic surgery. So it's like,
yeah,
the stuff doesn't line up, and there should be some other bigger problem that they're not telling us about, but maybe there's not. So I think that, you know, Westbrook, this season, I feel good about him being able to come back. I would imagine that, you know, I kind of wonder if that when he had that scope on the 26th of December, if this would have been the playoffs, would he have just said, "I'm going to play through the swelling, I don't care"?
Right.
You know, I think that that's kind of something I'm kind of curious about, because he'd been battling it throughout the season. They'd kind of been icing his knees and managing it, and he'd been having his knee drained kind of regularly. So I don't know. I assume that they would probably just try to push through for this postseason.
As someone who's had his knee drained before, that sucks. That is a painful process. That's not just like, oh, let's get a little, like, it's not like popping a zit. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
It hurts a lot. I can't even imagine having that regularly done.
What is that process like? What do you do? Do they just like you go to the doctor, they stick a needle in, and you leave, and it like hurts all day?
Yeah, I mean, even the process of like sticking the needle in, because it's a swollen area.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's already not feeling great, and then the actual draining part, and then yeah, I mean, it's not like having surgery, but there is like this weird soreness for, I don't know, a day or two. I mean, I'm sure he's getting better medical attention than I did.
Yeah, it's probably not like a rusty needle like you had.
Right. No, I mean, it was just a sharpened bobby pin that they just kept poking me with.
Yeah, that's all you were doing. It was a safety pin, and yeah, you were just kind of sticking it
in. And by doctor, I mean my sister.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
And there wasn't even swelling. She was like, "I'm going to poke your knee right now."
Right. Yeah. Like, so really, I guess if I'm the way I'm having my knee drained, it sucked. Maybe the way Russell Westbrook's.
Right. Maybe it's a better process for him, with how Durant has been. He's been so good. The team's been so good. What's the adjustment when Westbrook does come back?
Yeah, I know it took a little while, but you know, the past couple days, I've seen some people talking about the Thunder being better without Westbrook, and obviously
oh my
people
God.
Are taking that kind of crap up, you know. And then should the Thunder trade Westbrook for a more of a pure point guard? I you know, obviously all that stuff is ridiculous. The Thunder this season with Westbrook are 21-4, and you know,
that's not bad.
And
that's a pretty good record.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good, right? So I think that the adjustment that they're going to have to make with Westbrook, and I think that Russ has probably been noticing this as he's sitting out, is that, you know, Kevin Durant, like, you know, with Westbrook as his point guard, Durant won 3 scoring titles and obviously had no problem being an efficient scorer.
Right.
But I do think that Westbrook might need to ask himself, you know, how can I make sure that I get this out of Durant while I'm still getting what I do? And I think that you know, the Thunder need to ask themselves, have they been getting everything out of Kevin Durant that he's capable of? When Westbrook's out there with him, obviously there's a new balance to find when two guys are sharing basically 30% of the offense together, basically 60% of the offense together. And I think that that's going to be kind of the thing. You know, the Thunder are going to go back to playing the way they have. Westbrook and Durant have an awesome chemistry. They really understand how to play with each other. But I do think that, you know, Durant's obviously kind of gone to another level here. And you want to be able to just think, let's just add Westbrook to it, let him do what he does, and still keep this level of Durant. I think that that's where Russ has got to try to find that kind of new balance.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that was a really good comment about, like, how does Westbrook get that out of Durant? Because clearly he's capable of it. I mean, maybe for an extended stretch beyond what's happened is unrealistic, but the stretch is unrealistic. He's still doing it. I wonder if that's Westbrook saying, all right, I can get this out of him while getting mine, or maybe just realizing, like, maybe it's not so important for me to get mine every night.
Right. And that's the thing, is that, you know, I like I said, I've never thought Russ to be a guy that's trying to take over. And the way the Thunder have often played games is that Westbrook, because he, you know, he plays with so much energy, is that in the first quarter of games, Westbrook would come out and he would play extremely aggressive, put up a bunch of shots. And then I think that was kind of intentional to kind of spare Durant and leave him some legs for the second half. You know, and that's what I've kind of noticed in this scoring streak with Durant, is that, you know, at halftime of each game, he's routinely, you know, he's got 16 to 20 points almost every time. In the past with Westbrook, Durant, you know, often had 10 to 12 points, and then he would do a lot of his damage in the second half. So I kind of wonder if they'll kind of keep that same ebb and flow of, like, Westbrook's the early guy, Durant's the late guy. Because, you know, I think that, you know, to expect Durant to just continue to play this way all the time is unfair. At least I think it is.
it might just be underestimating him at this point. I have no idea. I have no idea what's up and down with him.
What if he is? What if this is really what Kevin Durant could do over an 82-game schedule? I guess he could. I looked at the numbers recently, and, like, yeah, he's shooting the ball a little bit better. His true shooting's up. But really, this season, his usage rate's just gone from like 27.9 to 33.5. And so, like, is it really just maybe that he's just getting more of the offense now? So, like, instead of taking 18 shots a game, he's routinely taking 23. And with his efficiency standards, that, you know, that therefore five extra shot a game means three more makes, which means, you know, eight more points. You know, so, like, I don't know. Maybe it's just really not all that shocking what he's doing.
I've thought the whole, like, are they better with Westbrook thing is stupid, and the whole they should trade him for a pure point guard. But now I'm on board. Because I just want to see this for 82 games. I just want to see what Durant can do for a full season. Just one season. We can bring him back after the season's done. But I do really want to see if this is capable. Because it is that thing where you said you've gone in thinking, all right, is this the night? And each night I've started like watching each game. I'm like, okay, maybe this is the night. And then he hits the first shot. I'm like, oh, no, it's still on. Like, all it takes is one. I'm just like, I just want to buy into this so much because it's so fun.
Yeah, and you know the thing with it is that, you know, I kind of was talking about this the other day with somebody, is that with Durant, you know, like last night, his numbers are obviously catching our attention because he's got this 30-point streak going, but before this streak kind of started, you know, Durant would routinely put up numbers like, oh, he's got 31 points and he's got 8 rebounds and 4 assists, and it's kind of like what it used to be with LeBron. I remember back in like 2007 to 2010 when LeBron was just putting up silly numbers every night. And it's like, oh yeah, LeBron had 34, 8, and 8 tonight. Like, yeah. But like when a guy like Paul George does it right now, or you know, Bradley Beal or somebody else, or just any other player in the league, and you see like you'll be like, oh man, Paul George had 33 tonight.
Yeah.
Man, playing really good. And like Durant does it, it's like, yeah, Kevin Durant had 33, what's the big deal? And so it's like you kind of become desensitized to these like incredible numbers. Just because you see him on such a routine, regular basis that, like, you're not realizing that, like, this dude just put up 35 points on 21 shots with 8 rebounds and 5 assists. Like, that's incredible.
Right.
And, you know, if somebody else were walking out there and doing that, you know, we would all be going, are you kidding me? This guy played an incredible game. And, you know, I think we've all gone through that kind of experience in the recent months with Stephen Curry, that like we all freaked out about, oh my gosh, Stephen Curry had 34 and he hit 6 threes. But I think now we're kind of starting to become desensitized to Stephen Curry,
right,
scoring 33 points on, you know, 22 shots. So I think that's probably like one of the steps in becoming a true superstar.
And not to compare the two, but just to relate to that, like last night Kevin Love had like 31, 14, and 5.
That's a great example.
Which is a good game, but it was funny how like I watched him. I felt like, yeah, he had a pretty good game. Like, he carried them without Peck, and, you know, he was good against just a bad Pelicans team who was missing their three best players. And then you look at the stats, you're like, wow, those are dumb stats. Like, that shouldn't be a normal reaction of like, oh, yeah, that sounds about right.
Oh, Love had 31 of 14? Okay.
Yeah. Even like
he missed a couple shots here and there. I saw two offensive rebounds he could have grabbed.
Yeah, in the first half, I think I was like, I just felt like I was like, I don't feel like Love's been dominating the boards at all tonight against this team. And then I looked and he had like 9 rebounds in the first half. I was like, okay, well, maybe I'm just an idiot.
I think that's truly the mark of like a great player right there. I think that's really like when we try to like summarize, like, why is this guy great? It's like, you know, I noticed the other night, and this is not to take anything away from LaMarcus Aldridge, but like the Thunder were playing the Blazers, and it felt like LaMarcus Aldridge had scored 50 points in the first 5 minutes of the game. Like,
right,
he was hitting all these jumpers, and it was like, you know, it was late in the second quarter, and I like looked up at the scoreboard. I was like, man, I bet Aldridge has got like 20, and I think he had 10 points, and I was like, wow, it really felt like he had a lot more. And then I really hadn't noticed anything Durant had done, and he had 18 at the half.
Yeah. You know?
It's like just that ability to just kind of just continually score points, continually put up your numbers, and nobody's really noticing what you're doing. And then at the end of the night, you've got 32. I think that's one of the like true marks of a great player.
I think that's kind of the fun thing about what Blake Griffin has done this season too, is he's putting up pretty incredible stats if you just look at them compared to other players. But it seems more routine with him now.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch a player kind of get to that point where you just – you don't expect it, but like you said, you're desensitized to these gaudy numbers.
Yeah, you're not like looking at the box score and going, holy crap, Blake Griffin played a nice game. He had 22 and 11. It's like, yeah, of course Blake Griffin had 22
and 11. Yeah, he's really good.
Like, what else would he have?
You got to explain to me this whole Derek Fisher cologne thing.
Oh my gosh. The Derek Fisher. The phenomenon still is going on too. Like, I don't know what it is about it. If it's like some magical cologne that just like smells amazing or what, But like basically, like Derek Fisher has like multiple players after games coming up to his locker and taking a hit of his cologne. And the first player I noticed doing it is like when Fisher was still like in the shower, Durant would be out and he would just straight up go just like steal it straight out of there and just like, you know, a couple squirts. And I asked KD about it after a game and he just said, "Oh, it's just because I don't have any right now." It's like, well, dude, go get some. Like,
well, I'm pretty sure they provide players with all of that stuff.
Yeah.
They all have these like basic products in there of like lotion and cologne and like, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. It's not like he's got to go to the store himself.
My conspiracy theory here is that Durant was kind of slow playing this, and that the story would get out, people would notice, some idiot like me would finally notice that he was stealing Derek Fisher's cologne, would tweet about it, and then, you know, 2 weeks later, Kevin Durant has a multi-million-dollar cologne deal done. I thought that was probably, it was probably like the most like incredibly smart, like, you know, that's probably like something Jay-Z told him, like when he signed up.
Right.
He was like here's how you get your deals. Like, you just pretend, and then somebody talks about it, and then boom, you're making millions of dollars.
I think you can level with us. This is really just them filming Thunderstruck 2, right?
Yes, that's exactly what.
How many times have you seen Thunderstruck?
I've seen it in its entirety twice.
Okay. It's not good.
I do have it on DVD.
Do you? Oh, wow.
I got it for me for Christmas last year.
I recorded it on the DVR to watch it again a couple months ago, and it hasn't been deleted yet.
You know, and when that person got it for me, I'm not going to say who it was because I don't want to make them feel bad in case they happen to listen to this today. But I couldn't tell if it was a gag gift or if it was you know, it's like, how was I – like, I opened it up, like, I looked at it. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to be like, oh, good one, dude. You got me thunderstruck. Or if it was supposed to be, oh, thank you. I really appreciate this.
Are you in Thunderstruck? Because they are at Thunder Games.
I am. Yeah. I am in there.
Can you, like, you see yourself?
I'm sitting at the score table. Like, they use game footage. And, like, I'm sitting down at that score table. And, like, I'm just barely in it. So I've got my Screen Actors Guild card. You know, I'm pretty, pretty legit now.
Who are you voting for the SAG Awards? Are you just voting for her?
Yeah. I was so moved by it. That's what all I'm voting for.
Yeah. Well, Royce, we can read your stuff at CBSSports.com.
Read it there.
Yeah, read it there, and maybe Daily Thunder if you have time.
Yeah, whatever.
And we'll follow you at Royce Young on Twitter.
That sounds awesome.
Thanks.